Aloha and welcome to our webinar. I'm Bruce Alley, a BBB accredited business consultant with Hawaii's BBB. Before we get started, I'd like to point out a few things to help you get the most out of this presentation. You should see two windows on your screen right now, the presentation window on the left and the webinar control panel on the upper right corner. To open the control panel, click on the black arrows on the upper right corner of your screen. Here you can adjust your audio settings and ask questions during the webinar. Just type them into the question box at the bottom and click send. Feel free to ask questions along the way, and please let us know if there are any other web-related topics you would like us to present in the future. Hawaii's BBB is committed to serving businesses better. One of the ways we do this is by offering educational webinars on a variety of topics that may serve as a resource for small businesses. Our guest presenter today is Mike Hulser, CEO and principal consultant of the BizMD. Mike came to Hawaii in late 2000 as the interim chief financial officer of Hawaiian Airlines. Mike then decided to establish his consulting practice right here in Hawaii. In 2009, the U.S. Small Business Administration named the BizMD the Financial Services Champions for the city and county of Honolulu for their work in helping small businesses effectively manage their financial affairs. So now I'll hand it over for some tips on driving profitability and cash flow. Mike?
Thank you very much, Bruce. Welcome everyone this morning, and first let me say I'm honored to be here, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau. What better sponsor can you have? And I'm very happy to have this opportunity to spend some time this morning talking to business owners and managers about the money, driving profitability and cash flow. So with that, let's get into it. In our view, these are some of the realities of business. Entrepreneurs, and I know a lot of them, work with a lot of them, do what they do because on some level they have a passion for their product or service. Whether it's jewelry, fine art, automobiles or motorcycles, fashion, etc. They're in it because something about it pulls at them, and typically, at least at a minimum, they're pretty good at it. That's why entrepreneurs get into what they do. Unfortunately, the entrepreneurs and their business teams can do a lot of work. They can sell a lot of stuff and not do so in a manner for the business that at a minimum allows the business to sustain itself, which is a key objective of any business, is to do things well enough so that you can keep doing them. That's why entrepreneurs often need help on the business side of things of their business. So the key concepts we will review today will hopefully help entrepreneurs and their businesses drive profitability and cash flow, which are the keys for any business of at least sustaining itself. And these concepts apply whether you're a for-profit business, a non-for-profit business, whether you do government business, a retail, industrial, it doesn't matter. These are key to the ongoing survival and healthiness of your business. So let's get into our key subjects. Today we're going to be discussing six key concepts. Effective management, using key metrics or indicators of how we're doing. Financial planning, or that dreaded word, budgeting. Effective cash management, because cash is the lifeblood of any business. Financial reporting and analysis, keeping the score. And lastly, interestingly enough, effective human resource practices. And I'll make clear in a little while why we think that is so important in any business. So we're now going to get into each of these in a little bit of depth, our six key concepts on driving profitability and cash flow. The first key concept is effective management. And there's a few key points here. The first one is the reality of the fact that the company, the firm, the business, the organization, is in the money business. If you're in business, you're in the money business. You might sell a product, you might provide a service. You can either be a profit or non-profit, and you're in the money business. A few years back, I prepared a financial review, analysis, and assessment for one of the major nonprofits here in Hawaii. And it was interesting. In my first interview with the CEO, probably 2 or 3 minutes into it, the CEO, who was a great business leader, said, "Here at Nonprofit X, we're in the money business." He went on to explain that money is the fuel that they burn to provide the very services to their participants that are so desperately needed. So this is the first reality. The business owner and the drivers in the business, the management team, must understand that the business is in the money business. They're here to make money. Alignment. There can be only one plan. Now, in the process of trying to select a strategy, to choose between alternative ways of doing things, to get at how to attack a major problem or exploit an opportunity, there can, and in fact there should be, vigorous debate on how to do it. Typically, different pieces, different functions in the business will see it differently. You know, marketing and sales may have one opinion, engineering may have another. Finance may have another. In the end, however, once the decision is made, as far as everyone outside the room will ever know, the decision was unanimous. There is no such thing as a minority position on the decision. Once we've made the decision, the entire management team and then the entire business team, their task is to make the decision successful. So management must be aligned. That's a critical success factor. Management process. When we go into new situations with clients, we try to quickly get a handle on what is the process or lack thereof employed to bring to bear the talents in the leaders of the leaders in the business on how to improve the performance of the business. So we kind of say it as, who comes together, how often, with what key information, facts, numbers, etc., to try to understand how are we performing, so that if we're not performing the way we need to be, we can take corrective action. If we're doing good, to ensure that we're positioned to keep doing good. We typically recommend to our clients that they employ a weekly management process, that the drivers of the business come together once a week with those facts and indicators to understand how they're doing, and that the team around the table be, in effect, form a whole brain, okay? Numbers-oriented people, people more not numbers-oriented, but programmatically oriented, the insensitive, the sensitive, the quick, the contemplative. The idea is to attack a key problem or opportunity from a number of different angles. And a key point in the process is no spectators allowed. Everyone at the table will get assignments, will be expected to execute them, and actively participate in the management process. Responsibility. Take it. If you're in business, it's not going to do anybody any good for you or your managers, your management team, to moan about, oh, those people on Wall Street started this, oh, the weather's bad, oh, the IRS is doing this, local government is doing that. None of that matters. The results of your business are driven by you and your management team. If it's good news, you get to take the credit. If it's bad news, you get 100% of the blame. Take responsibility for your business results. Hey, I know we have a challenging economy out there right now. There's no question about it. But you know what? We have clients that had record years last year, their best year ever, and they're improving on that this year because they take responsibility, they attack their problems, they exploit the opportunities. So when your business is not performing well and you're wondering where to look to start blaming, I suggest you start with looking in the mirror. That's where the blame starts. Okay? Decision making. This is key. If you've got talented people on your team, involve them in the decision making. If they're a leader, they need to be expected to be part of the brain, not just extra hands. I find it interesting the first time that I meet with management teams and new clients, and I ask a few key questions. Often, the rest of the team will not answer a question until they first look to the leader to see how they might answer it. Well, that's one way to play the game. The other way to play the game is to be sitting at the table, confident of your knowledge and position in the business, and being comfortable with your peer group and your boss and saying, here's what I think. And I think this because here are the facts that support what I think. So if we're going to be on the team, we're going to be one of the drivers, we need to be part of the decision making. So these are some of the key points of, in our view, effective management that's going to be required to really make your business perform. So with that, let's move on to our next key point, which is key metrics usage. And this goes by various names in different places. Some people call them key indicators, key performance indicators. That part doesn't matter. The part that's important is trying to ask the question, what is important? If things are important, we want to measure them. I have found in many, many settings across a vast array of businesses that if we have a reasonably talented team bought in, we can make things improve. If we measure things, if we keep communicating to the team, here's the objective, and here's where we stand versus the objective, and are we going towards or away from the objective, I have found that on many different measures, teams make things better. One retailer I worked with here had a problem with their people using the miscellaneous key when they made sales. Well, when they did that, of course, inventory got all screwed up. We didn't know what thing just got sold. Therefore, we didn't know what was on hand, what we needed to order, etc. This was happening several hundred times a week. We announced that we wanted use of the miscellaneous key to stop. We wanted to get to zero, never to be used again. In about 6 months, we hit zero from several hundred times a week. We measured it for a bit longer, and it stayed at zero, and we quit measuring it about 5 years ago. That business team took control of that and fixed the problem. We want to have weekly numerical review. We strongly suggest this to all of our clients. A key belief of mine is a week is enough time to make something happen. If it's important, a turned-on management team and their people can accomplish something within a week. And we want to try to understand a couple of things. How are we doing versus what we used to do? And how are we doing versus what we intended to do? Of course, we want to be improving on the past, regardless of the economy. And we want to be achieving our targets, our objectives. Now, when you think about things that might be important, some things readily come to mind. Revenue or sales volume, how much business are we doing? Well, just as important is the margin on the volume. When I think of the significant performance improvement that we've been a part of with clients in the past couple years, it's been paying attention to their margins and not their volume. We actually have clients that have 40% less volume than they had 2 years ago, and they have more profit because they're working the important things. If you sell a product, turning your inventory is key. If you have cash locked up in inventory that's not moving, that's a problem. You need to get that cash out of the inventory and working for you. Of course, measuring the quality of your goods and services, how satisfied your customers are, very important. Delivery promises, you know, particularly if you have a business where you take orders and then deliver or ship or whatever, how often do you break the promise? How often is it when the item was supposed to ship on the 15th and it doesn't go even until the 16th? That is no cigar. That's a broken promise. And the last one we note here, of course, is productivity, your cost of doing business. And productivity is a word that applies to every function. The sales floor, the warehouse, the accounting department, the human resource department. Productivity should be expected in every piece of the business. When I start with business teams, I like to write up front to ask them a question. So, how are we doing? How'd we do last week? Now, unfortunately, most of the time, the business team doesn't have the answer to that question. Or maybe they can answer a piece of it. They can say, well, we know what sales were last week. Okay, that's a start. But my point is, if I have the drivers of the business around the table, and they don't know whether last week was a victory or defeat, a success or failure, it's, Houston, we have a problem, okay? So our management process using our key metrics should ensure that at a minimum, when the team leaves that meeting, they know, supported by facts and numbers, how the business is performing. And they should know it to the point where they can predict the monthly financial results. I do this with all of my clients. As we track things going through the month, I'm taking a position on, from what we've seen so far, as to what the financial statements are going to say. Are we going to have a profit or a loss? Are we going to beat plan or be behind plan, etc.? If we're looking at the right things weekly, it should be nearly impossible for the financial statements to surprise us. And a strong belief of mine is, in business, there is no such thing as a pleasant surprise. Okay? We want to be on top of things. And actually, there more than once I've found in the past that when the financial statements are at odds with what we've been looking at weekly, and we do a little investigation, we find erroneous financial statements. Yep, it does happen. Then we're able to get them fixed. So I strongly encourage you to be measuring the important things in your business and driving for improvement. Don't accept obstacles or barriers. Okay, so that's one of our key points, key metrics, or key indicators usage. Let's move on. Financial planning or budgeting. It's interesting how most people don't like the word budgeting, like it's something nasty or unpleasant. I have a totally different view of it. A budget or a financial plan for a year is really the roadmap for a business. Now, it's not too tough for us here in Hawaii to get where we want to go on the roadways. It may take a while if you're in rush hour on H1. But back, you know, I used to live on the mainland, and if I wanted to go from, you know, Virginia to, let's say, Chicago, Illinois, well, I was probably going to have to consult an atlas or a map before I took off. Would not be the best idea to say, well, let's just get in the car and head in one direction or another and see how close we come. That wouldn't be the way to do it. But, you know, there are businesses trying it that way every day because they don't have a plan. The plan is where it all comes together. A good financial planner budget tries to match up two things. One, what are the resources required in the business to get the job done? And two, what are the results desired? And quite often, there's a great disparity between these. may want to grow sales by a significant percentage. We may want to sharply improve inventory turnover. But on the other hand, we may struggle with being able to afford the resources needed to cause that. This is the power of the budget. The power of the budget is not producing an Excel spreadsheet. High school kids could do that nowadays. The power of the budget is the discussion and the debate about trying to match up the desired results and the required resources. Now, once we have a plan, it's on paper, remember our rule that all decisions are reported out unanimously. It's now management's collective and aligned challenge to make the plan come true. So this is what we will be measuring towards, delivering the revenue volume, delivering the profitability, delivering the cash flow that the plan calls for. The plan, of course, has got to be appropriately detailed. In a larger organization, you're going to want to have perhaps different profit or cost centers. If you have a warehousing operation, well, the warehouse manager deserves a statement at the end of the month saying how much money did they spend in their operating expenses versus their budget, okay? Just as the sales function deserves that. We may have different product or service lines in the business. Well, at a minimum, you want to know for each different product or service line what its margin or gross profit is. Because I've seen this time and again, that the first time we take a business and we break it down by product or service lines, we find product or service lines that have negative margin, that every time we sell a piece or an hour's worth, whatever, we lose money. It's interesting how I'd say pretty much universally that financial performance improvement always involves simply stop doing some of the current dumb stuff. I guarantee you, you take a hard look at your business right now, and there's probably some, quote, dumb stuff going on. So one way you improve is simply by stop doing that. Then the last thing about a budget is, of course, it wants to be at least a monthly budget. You know, I've seen and heard talk over the years about budgeting down to the week and stuff like that. I really don't see the payoff to that. If we're using our effective management process, if we're using our key metrics, well, we're looking at things weekly that will hopefully lead us to, you know, predicting the financial statements, not being surprised, and accomplishing our plan. So having a plan, having a budget is a good thing. The vigorous debate and discussion that's part of it is key to your management team getting the job done. So with that, let's move on. Effective cash management. In any business, profit or non-profit, whatever kind of business, it doesn't matter. There is one common denominator. Cash is the lifeblood of the business. Cash is what you make payroll with. It's what you make your rent payment with. It's how you pay back your debts. It's what you pay taxes with. Cash is critical. You can't make your rent payment by delivering a bunch of product to your landlord. You probably can't make your payroll that way either. Tell your people to go out in the warehouse and just grab an armload of stuff. That's their pay for the week. They expect cash. Running out of cash is what kills businesses. Most people have a misunderstanding. They think that bankruptcy is caused by a lack of profit. Well, it's not. Bankruptcy is caused by a lack of cash. There are many, many organizations that are reporting an accounting profit right up till the day they declare bankruptcy or turn the lights out. That can be caused by the fact that they bought too much inventory they can't sell. They're not collecting their receivables, perhaps because they service their customers poorly and the customers don't want to pay. Perhaps they too heavily dispersed payables to their suppliers and then couldn't make payroll. Paying attention to cash is the most important thing. The cash position must be highly visible to the management team. We strongly encourage all of our clients to make it agenda item number one in the weekly management review. Because if the cash picture is not good, we don't need to be in a hurry to go to agenda item number two. We need to make cash flow net positive. We encourage our clients to use a rolling 13-week cash flow forecast, looking forward. What will the inflows be? Particularly if we have a plan, we have some guidance there, but we might be running above or below plan. So we're going to do our best estimate, and we're going to revise it every week of what the inflows might be. Then, for outflows or disbursements, we're going to make a separation. The first area of outflows we call hard cost. Hard cost are things in our view that if you don't stay on top of these and keep paying them, you're going to have a problem in a hurry. The first one, of course, is payroll. Most likely your people are not going to keep coming to work if they don't get paid. You got to keep making payroll. Next one, occupancy, your rent, utilities, internet connections, that kind of stuff. Again, if you don't pay those, you're going to have a problem. Debt, your creditors, your bank, if you have loans, expects you to make those payments. And then lastly, taxes. You know, here we've got to pay our GET monthly. We have estimated tax payments for income that we need to make. And those things need to be on time and in sufficient amount, or you've got a problem coming. Hard costs have got to be paid. Now, the last part of disbursements are, and you see that I've boldened this here, potential payments to suppliers. Because any disbursements here come after the hard cost. So, in a particular week, if we have light inflows, and the way things worked out by week was we have both a payroll and rents due, and oh my goodness, the monthly GET payment due also, we might have a week where we cannot disperse a single dollar to a supplier. And that would be rational behavior, okay? That's why we use this, because most people can tell when their hard costs are going to happen by week. So you forecast the inflows, you lay in the hard cost. It tells you how much you have available by week to pay to suppliers, and then you can behave accordingly. Now let's talk about suppliers for just a minute before we leave this chart. First key thing is, not all suppliers are created equal. You've got suppliers that are critically, vitally important to your company. You've got other suppliers that might be lesser important, or in fact, on a go-forward basis, might not be important at all. Simply you owe them money. The suppliers that are most important to you are the ones who are first in line or first at the trough when it comes to receiving disbursements from you. We disperse based on importance to the business. That's a cold hard fact of the business world. Okay? The most important ones come first. Last point is, we need to learn to pay when we need to, which is not necessarily when things are due. You know, out there in the business world, people behave differently. Some firms are right on top of their receivables collection. If you've got 30-day terms and they haven't received the payment by day 32, your phone's going to ring. And they're going to say, where's the money? And hooray for them. That's appropriate behavior. So they're going to train you that when you don't pay them on time, you're going to get a phone call. Okay. Now, it's interesting enough that at the other end of the scale are suppliers that may send you an invoice and you never hear a thing. You can go 30, 60 days or even more past due before you'll hear a word. Okay. Now, like it or not, particularly in crunch times like we are now in this economy, We need to get in the habit of paying when we need to. And again, going back to that, not all suppliers are created equal. That's a fact of life. It also provides us good guidance on how to conduct our business. Our business needs to be a critical supplier to our customers. That way, hopefully, we're towards the head of the line when it comes to disbursements time. Okay? So a key point is effectively managing your cash, because it is the lifeblood of your business. Let's move on. Financial reporting and analysis, or as I like to think of it, the score. Monthly financial statements are required. I've seen all kinds of things. You can't hardly imagine. I know businesses out there right now where their last financial statement was over 2 years ago. They haven't seen one since. Okay? That's a problem. An example I like to point out to business people is, you watch basketball on TV, and right now we're in the midst of March Madness. Understand there was a lot of upsets yesterday, so it looks like we're going to have a good getting to the Final Four. But when you watch a basketball game and you watch the players run up and down the floor, isn't it fascinating that they look up at the scoreboard almost every time they run up and down the floor? Now remember, it's typically only 24 seconds or so since they just ran down the floor the time before. But they look up at the scoreboard again, because the score is vitally important. And just like it's important to them, it's important to you and your business. You need to know the score. You need to know how you're doing. So we want high-quality financial statements. But as our second bullet here says, we also want them timely. In the absolute worst case, you want to be reviewing the financial statements for the prior month absolutely no later than the 15th of the month following. What you really want to do is strive for holding those financials within 5 days. And it's very, very doable. You know, I started my Fortune 50 life, if you will, back in the mid-70s, long time ago. And back in that major business, happened to be GE, we would report our preliminary financials on the morning of the third day of the following month, and we would report the finals on the morning of the fourth day. And that was 35 years ago. Now, I find it interesting today that all too often when I push for this in a business, all the noise starts. Oh, we don't have the systems. We don't have the this. We don't have the that. Frankly, that's all a bunch of crap in my view. The problem is the humans. It ain't the computers. It ain't the systems or none of that stuff. We need to get people's minds around the fact that this is what we need. Can you imagine two NBA teams playing, and we tell them, okay, well, you guys play the game. There won't be a scoreboard. We'll mail you the score 2 months from now. Can you imagine that? No. And we can't put up with that in the business world either. We want credible financial statements, and we want them now, and there is simply no good excuse for not having them. And when we get them, we want a comprehensive package. We don't want just one column of a P&L. We want a P&L, both P&L for profit and loss statement, both for the current month and for year to date. And of course, thinking back to our key metrics notion, we want to compare the current month and year to date actual to our plan and to actual for the prior year, so we know how we're doing versus how we used to do and how we intend to do. Now, along with the P&L, we have the balance sheet. And I'm betting that for most of you, you're probably a little nervous about your balance sheet, not really sure how to read it. This is true of a lot of people, even some accountants, let me assure you. One way to help bring your balance sheet to life is get it reported in four-column format, and that's the items that we have listed here. So let's use the example where a business ends its year in December, and we're reporting for June. So starting from the left, we would have the current month, the June balance sheet. Then immediately to the right of it, we would have the prior month, May. Then to the right of that, we would have the prior year end, December. And then lastly, to the right of that, we would have the prior year, which would be June of last year. And I have found that when you lay these four columns side by side, it brings the balance sheet to life, because now I can see the changes that happened last month when I compare the current month to the prior. I can see the change. Let's say, how much has inventory changed thus far this year by comparing the current month to the prior year? Now I can also see, let's say, cash or receivables or payables, how have they changed in a year? Well, I can very quickly see the current month versus the same month in the prior year. I strongly encourage four-column reporting for your balance sheet. But typically, we're not done yet in having a fully complete financial package. We need to understand sales and margins, and if we sell a product, inventory composition by type of product, by supplier, whatever we can support from a reporting point of view. We want to understand where the sales and margin are and where they are not. We want to understand, are big sellers also big pieces of the inventory, or do we have a tough situation where our fast-selling stuff we can't keep in stock, yet the inventory is full of a bunch of stuff that's not selling? Then we need an action plan. Receivables and payables agings. Receivables aging tells us who owes us money that we should have already received. Who's getting after that to get the money into our bank account? And our payables agings make sure that we understand who, if anyone, amongst our supplier base have we pushed towards the back of the line, and how old is that payment due getting. And then lastly, and I consider this the most important piece of the financial statements, is analytical commentary from the people that prepared them. This ought to be, you know, one page is good, bulletized is terrific. It says, what are the issues or opportunities, what are the highlights and the lowlights in the numbers? It's not enough for your financial people to hand you, you know, a set of numbers exhibits and kind of defy you to find the nuggets that are hidden therein. They need to tell you, here's the things that are going right, here's the things that are going wrong, here's some good news, here's some bad news. They basically need to say, pay attention to this. That's doing the whole job, the comprehensive package. Now, of course, if your financial people are going to produce such a package, then it needs to be paid attention to. In-depth management review is required so that the management team understands, where are we on track, where are we not on track. If we're not on track in something that's important, then who's going to do what, to whom, my when, to get us on track? What are the issues in our performance? What problems need resolution? And where are the opportunities? Who's going to exploit them to take us to a higher level of performance? So in wrapping up, you know, financial reporting and analysis, understanding the score, how we're truly performing, is critical to performing. Just trying to move to the next slide here. There we go. Okay. All right, our last key area, and then I've already got some questions, and we're going to jump on those in just a second. Thank you for your questions. Effective human resource practices. I'm sure some of you are scratching your head out there right now. You're thinking, what's this financial guy doing talking about human resource stuff? Well, this is at my core beliefs. My belief is your people are your primary differentiator. Your competitors, just like you, have got offices, warehouses, retail stores, racks, vehicles, computers, information systems, just like you. The one thing that you have that your competitors do not is your people. That's why they are your primary differentiator. And they're going to differentiate you either way. They're either going to be competitive assets or competitive advantages for you, or they're going to be liabilities or problems. And hey, let's face it. In many cases, our people are both. We will often have people that have a tremendous strength in a particular area and a tremendous blind side in another area. That's kind of the fun of being people, okay? It's our job to manage them. It's our job to make sure we have the right people on the field, okay, led properly, expected properly, managed properly to drive the performance of the business. To maximize the performance of your business, you need to pay sharp attention to the performance of your people. And isn't it fascinating that even the smallest businesses will have things like maintenance agreements on their copy machines, okay, but don't have maintenance agreements for their people? See, quite often we have preventative programs, tune-ups, etc., for everything but our people, and it's not going to be our forklifts that win the battle versus our competitors. I can assure you, it's going to be your people. So let's talk about a few key things that are important in the realm of human resources. Organization structure. Clarity of responsibility and authority. When I first meet with a new owner or top manager, I say, well, show me the organization chart. Quite often they'll say, Mike, we're not that formal around here. I say, okay, fine, let's just draw it out. Well, by the time we get done drawing, there are so many intersecting and crossing lines, it's clear why we have performance issues. Nobody knows who reports to who the boss is, who's got what responsibility or authority. That's why we have a lack of performance. You know, one of my core beliefs is everybody deserves one boss, and hopefully only one. And we need to clarify who has what responsibility and who has what authority to make decisions. Next key point. Job descriptions. It's like an epidemic out there that the vast majority of job descriptions either don't exist or are woefully out of date. This amazes me. Don't we think that job descriptions help our people understand what's expected of them? And by expectations, I mean results. I've seen job descriptions that list 40 or 50 different tasks, but don't make clear why does the position exist. This is the most important part. Your job description should make clear to your people, this is why you get out of bed and come in here each morning. This is what I'm paying you to make happen. The expected results are key in job descriptions. Evaluations. You know, I've picked up a new client recently, sizable client, been around for decades. Here in June, we're going to do the first human resource reviews that have ever occurred in that company. Yep, the first ones in forever, in effect. I strongly believe in them because I believe that evaluations have a coaching aspect, have a performance aspect, a performance enhancement aspect to them. Evaluation should be at least annual. Oftentimes I hear people want to talk about doing them semi-annually or even quarterly. Well, that sounds good. I actually tried it once. I felt like my job had become evaluating all the time. Let's start first with doing a good job annually. And evaluations ought to focus on how is the employee doing in their job? What do they need to focus on to do their job better? And what can you do to help them? Okay. So we want to look back a little bit and be fact-based, but we want to be forward-looking in what we need to do and how we're going to get it done. Evaluations are critical to good performance. oftentimes management teams get caught up in the format for evaluations. Well, over the past 35 years, I've seen a whole lot of forms. You know what? The forms don't make any difference. When I think about the best evaluations that I have actually received over the years, the best ones are often a letter from my boss that doesn't even take a full page that says, Mike, for you to progress in your career as I know you would like to do, here are the things you need to pay close attention to. That gets my attention. That's the boss trying to help me achieve what I want to achieve. It has nothing to do with filling in the squares, coloring in the dots, da-da-da. Now, if we're going to evaluate and understand performance, that ought to drive compensation. In your business, pay for performance. Do not pay for time. Do not pay for longevity, friendly or family relationships, personality, looks, none of that. Performance is what counts. Every position on your payroll should exist for one reason only, and that is to add value to your business by causing results. In several of our clients, 100% of the people on their payroll have a variable component to their pay based on results. Now, most of us can easily think of, like in the sales function, using commissions as a way of paying. That's an excellent example of paying for results. Of course, we have to keep an eye on margins. I actually have clients who don't pay commissions on sales. They pay commission on the margin dollars in those sales to make sure there's profit there. We can apply the same concepts to every function. We can apply it to the human resource function, the accounting and financial function, the warehousing function on paying for results. You can pay for lack of errors. You can pay for timeliness. You can pay for comprehensive and completeness. We've got clients doing all of these things. Typically, the higher level positions in the organization have a greater piece of the compensation that's variable, and typically lower in the lower levels. But we believe that variable compensation tied to results strongly drives alignment between the company and its employees. Okay? So with that, we're going to touch on our summary for just a second, and then we're going to answer a couple questions. In summary, entrepreneurs who most likely love their business and work very hard at it, you know, need to do some other things to make sure they get the continued enjoyment of doing their business. They need to effectively manage, remembering they're in the money business, driving alignment, taking responsibility. They need to measure things that are important, need to understand, are we doing better than we used to do, and are we doing what we said we were going to do? We need to have a plan that attempts to match up the results that are desired with the resources that are required. Cash is the blood. While we're paying attention to everything else, we need to pay close attention to cash, because we have to make payroll, we have to pay the rent, we have to make the loan payments, etc. Effective cash management is agenda item number one. We have to report the score, because the score is important, and I actually believe that high-performance managers are vitally interested in the score. That's part of what they come to work to do, is to put points on the board. And lastly, human resource practices, because it is your people, not your fork trucks or your PCs or your buildings, that make it happen in your company. It is your people. And I believe if you pay attention to these key concepts, it will help you and your management teams really make your businesses perform, driving profitability and cash flow. So with that, we've got a few minutes to take some questions that are in here. And let's see, Bruce, do I just to click on this? How do I get a particular question there? Okay. One question that's come in is how could we apply variable compensation concepts in our business? Well, let's just take, for instance, suppose you have people that are responsible for collecting receivables. Well, a piece of their pay can be driven by keeping the past due portion of receivables less than a certain percentage of the total. Or you could start with, let's say, receivables start out the past due portion at $2 million, and as they bring them down, each $100,000, they get a bonus for doing that. Okay? So you can, if you look at each function in the important outputs, and then attempt to tie a piece of pay to one of three things, the quality of the output, the timeliness of the output, or the cost or productivity of the output, then you have ways to pay for performance. Okay? Thank you for that question. Next question is, who should be involved in the budgeting process? Well, I can tell you that the worst way to do a budget is for the company accountant or controller to go play with Excel for a while, come out of their office and say, here's the budget. That's a waste of paper. At a minimum, the management team that's going to be responsible for making the budget come true all need to be involved. There needs to be ownership, participation. And there may be people outside of the key management team who are key players, key knowledgeable people, who might have a great understanding of perhaps the resources required to make a particular thing happen. They might need to be involved. Generally, when I think about budgeting, I like to be inclusive. I also like to keep in mind that we're not in the budgeting business. So, funny enough, as much as I look forward to get into budgeting, I look forward to getting out of it, to having the plan, having the alignment of resources and results, and now making it come true. Thank you for that question. Next question here. Pay when you need to. Isn't that going to affect your reputation with suppliers? It might. It might. And particularly when I've done turnaround or crisis management work, and I've done a lot of talking to suppliers where there's aged payables. And typically, a point that I try to make is this. Look, as long as our business is viable, you have the potential of getting paid. If I were to be foolish and disperse funds simply to make you happy or to make you not call me today, and that weren't the most critical use of my funds, and that causes me to close the doors, that's not going to be helpful to you or anybody else in the future. So, indeed, we want to learn to pay per the expectations of our suppliers, particularly for the key ones or the critical ones first. In tight times like today, it is indeed doubtful that you'll be able to make everybody happy all the time. You probably won't be able to, but prioritize based on importance. That's an excellent question. Thank you. Next question. Oh, boy, this is a good one. How would you rate your key concepts in order of performance? So, see, this one I'm probably best off closing my eyes instead of looking at my charts. But I know that in these charts, the things that are key to me. One is this notion that the team understands that we're in business to make money. It's vital. So I'm going to pick a couple of the concepts off of the different charts that I think are the most important. The understanding that we're here to make money is key. The understanding that we must be aligned and take responsibility is key. The notion that we're only going to drive performance through our people. I've seen new information systems. I've seen new equipment purchased over the years that don't make a dent in the performance of the business because it's only people effectively utilizing them that make a difference. So I believe the understanding of the importance of the people is key. You know, I can't discount the importance of cash, but I believe if we have a good plan and aligned management understanding that you're in the money business and you're paying attention to the performance of your key differentiator, your people, that you will have a far better chance of driving positive cash flow. All right, and that's the last of the questions that I have here. I don't see any others. Maybe wait just a second to see if any others pop up, but if not, I have really enjoyed this opportunity to speak with you this morning. Hope we have an opportunity to do it again, because there are things here that we can explore much more deeply in making your business perform. So for Mike Hulser, the BizMD, and the Better Business Bureau of Hawaii, thank you, and have a great day.
Mike, I'd like to thank you for your time today, and mahalo to all of you who have participated. We're glad you joined us and hope the information was helpful for you and your business. Our next webinar will be April 7th. The topic will be Operations and Structure in the Family Business. A brief survey will appear on your screen shortly. Your feedback is important to us, so please take a few minutes, tell us what you think of the webinar, and please feel free to get in touch with us at any time. Our contact information is on your screen. Thank you again, and aloha.
Great. So there's at least the possibility of feedback.